This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello everyone, welcome back or welcome to a new episode of Here for the Crack with me, Emma Neal. I hope you're all doing good. I'm currently in Bohol in, sorry, I feel like I keep saying it wrong. I feel like I say it different every single time. I don't know if it's Bohol or, no, that sounds too weird. That sounds way too Belfast. I feel like it's Bohol in the Philippines. We're staying in like a little glamping resort, which is really cute. We're in this big kind of bubble, like a big dome. Not one of those see-through ones though. My friend actually recently just stayed in one of those like actual kind of, I don't think they're made out of glass, but you know the ones that are literally the domes that look like snow globes and they're fully clear and you can like see into the forest in Ireland. Yeah, my friend recently stayed in one of them and she's made me really want to go stay in them because it actually looked so beautiful. But anyway, where we're staying is not like that. It's an opaque bubble. It's actually dark green, which is an interesting choice because it is so hot here. Like I'm talking upwards of 35 degrees every day. And when the sun hits this thing, oh my God, it's like a little greenhouse. Like you literally can't be in the room past 9 a.m. or you'll just get cooked alive. I feel like they need to put a bit of shade over the top of it or something. I mean, there is aircon and a fan in here, but like even with that blasting full at that time in the morning, like it has like basically the worst time is from about 8:30 until midday. That's when it's the worst. Just whatever way the sun is like shining on this particular tent is when it's like absolutely roasting and you literally can't be in it. But it's fine because there's a pool right outside. So we've just been waking up from the heat and just going straight into the pool and having our breakfast. As beautiful as Bohol is and as much of a nice time we've had here, I would say it's been the most underwhelming stop so far. Do I mean that across the whole trip or maybe just the Philippines? Yeah, just for the Philippines, it's probably been the most underwhelming stop. And that's not to say that we're having a bad time whatsoever. Like we've actually had a really nice past couple of days. Yeah, we were here for 3 nights. But yeah, just not what we expected, I guess. Not a massive amount to do and the kind of main, we're actually not staying anywhere near the main touristy bit. It's a good 45 minutes to an hour drive from here, which when we were looking, like when we were on our way from the port where we got off the boat to our accommodation, we were like, oh my God, have we completely fucked it here? We're staying in the middle of nowhere. Like it's going to take us so long if we just want to get food quickly or do anything really. And then after going into the main tourist bit on the first day, we were like, honestly, thank God we're not staying there. I just really didn't like the vibe at all. It was really giving Tac City, to be honest. It was, okay, look, not to absolutely slander Benidorm, because you know what? I actually do fully understand why people go to places like Benidorm, or I don't even know what other places to list to put in that category. Anyway, I do fully understand why people go to this because people like comfort, people like knowing exactly what they're going to get, knowing that they're going to get good weather, a pool, like decent accommodation, decent food. Maybe they're not very adventurous with food. They want to know that they can go to a restaurant that's got steak and chips. And I fully understand why people choose to go on a holiday like that. However, it obviously does come with that kind of like tacky in your face side of things. And that's what Bohol was giving. Not the whole of Bohol, but the like main touristy strip in Panglao. So yeah, just really not what we were expecting. We were kind of thinking it was like another little beautiful Filipino island, which it is. It is another beautiful Filipino island. It's just literally that one strip I didn't like. But then at the same time, if you want to go to like the nice restaurants, You kind of have to go there. So we did go and we got lots of nice food and it was good. But as we were coming away, we were like, wow, it really is the Filipino Benidorm. But to be honest, we haven't ventured too much into there because of where we're staying. It's actually been so nice just kind of staying at the accommodation and chilling out and just having pool days and being in the sun and just reading my book. I've had an absolute nightmare when it's come to reading. Amazon Kindle seriously need to sort this out, because you guys know me. You know I am an Amazon Kindle fan till I die. Like, if Amazon Kindle has no fans, I am dead. I just think they're the best things ever. Not only do they save you so much money, because I just wait until like all books that I want. I just constantly have a list of books that I want to purchase and I just wait till they go on sale for 99p or £1.99. Like, I rarely pay more than that for a book. So first of all, it saves me so much money. Second of all, I find them so handy because they're so much less bulky and easier to carry around than a book. And the fact that you can literally store so many on them and they're so great for taking on holiday and everything. And you would think for bringing away for 2 months traveling. But turns out, okay, so I bought a book on the Kindle store while I was out here. And my Amazon account detected that that was purchased from somewhere that wasn't like normally, obviously wasn't from Belfast, okay? So they flagged that as suspicious activity and put my account on hold and emailed me saying that in order to regain my account, I had to send proof of, I don't really know what they were at. Basically, they wanted me to send them a picture of a card, but like covering all the numbers on it, but just showing the last four digits of the card number, as well as my name on the card to prove that it was my card and that I had it in my possession. However, the card that they were saying in the email wasn't a card that I had owned and wasn't a card that had ever been associated with my Amazon account. And I checked all of my cards. I checked all of my Apple Pay cards, because that can be like, that can have like different card details, your Apple Pay ones. I also checked all of my, like I searched through my emails of all my emails from Amazon to check all of my recent orders and checked what they were all paid for on. And there was literally no link to this card, right? So I submitted screenshots of my most recent Amazon orders saying what cards they were linked to and that I didn't know what they were talking about, basically. And they shut my account. They literally just fully shut my account. And because it had logged me out on my Kindle, because when my account went on hold, basically, and I completely forgot that it had gone on hold and then went to try and browse on the Kindle library, which was stupid because I would have been fine. Like, I would have been able to keep on reading on my Kindle had I have not logged in to the account to try and buy books, if that makes sense. Like, I would have just been able to carry on reading what I was reading and like move on to other books that I'd already downloaded. But because I tried to log in to browse the Kindle store and it recognized that my account was on hold, it logged me out of my Kindle. And now I can't get back onto that account. Can't read any books on my Kindle. I have so many books that I've downloaded and haven't read yet. I literally don't know what to do about it. Like, there's also no point in me trying to sort out the situation now because I don't have my normal like UK SIM card in my phone, so I can't do any of the kind of like confirmation texts and calls and shit like that because I've got a Filipino SIM in my phone at the moment. I'm also just worried about like it flagging more suspicious activity coming from the Philippines. So I'm not going to even try and sort it until I get home. But it is just an absolute bloody nightmare. Also, it's really hard to come by a bookshop out here. Like, it's really not a common occurrence. I was kind of hoping I'd come across like a hostel or a cafe or something that had, you know, where people leave like books they've already left and you can either do a book swap or you can just grab one if you're wanting one. And I never really came across one. So I went a solid 2 weeks there without a book, which, first of all, problems, I get it, not a big deal. But also, I'm in the Philippines, there's lots of beach days, lots of lying by lagoons. It would be so nice to have a book. There were so many times I was like, oh my god, I really miss reading right now. Whereas I was literally not reading whatsoever when I was in Vietnam, because you're just kind of like, go, go, go all the time. But here's a lot more chill, a lot more water activities, beach days, things like that. So I really did miss having a book. But thank god, found a bookstore. I actually got myself 2 books. I was just going to get one, and I'm so glad I got 2 now because I'm nearly finished the first one. I've been absolutely glued to it. It's called Others Were Emeralds. It's not too long of a read. I think it's about 275 pages. I've got about 60 pages left to read. I've been stuck to it for the last 2-3 days. It's based in a suburb in Sydney, and it's centered around a friendship group that are all children of Asian immigrants to Australia. And all of their parents have been refugees, but they're like first generation. What do you call that? The name's gone on in my head. When you're like the first generation born in the country that your parents have immigrated to. Nah, sorry, it's completely gone. Anyway, it's based on this friendship group. I don't want to give too much away. There's themes of love, loss, discrimination, classism. It's a great book. I've really enjoyed it and I'd really recommend it. And it's written very poetically. I've been underlining the shit out of it. But yeah, my book club book for this month is actually Adam Kay's book. And it's called "'Twas the Night Shift Before Christmas," sorry. So I read his This Is Going to Hurt. And then I also read his other one. What was that called? No. That's also gone out of my head. Anyway, I've read two of Adam Kay's books and I've really liked them. So I thought I'll throw in the third one and make it the book club book. But I actually can't read that currently because of the whole Kindle situation. So I'm going to have to try and quickly catch up on that when I get back to Belfast. What do I have to update you on since I last spoke to you? I feel like loads, actually. We've done so much in the last week or so. So last time I spoke to you, we were in Shargal, which is like the Surf Island. And I was talking about being excited for where we were going next, for seeing like swimming with the turtles and seeing the whale sharks. So seeing or swimming with whale sharks has always been like a huge dream of mine. They're such beautiful, like majestic creatures, and I would just love to experience that someday. And I knew you could see them in the Philippines. You can also see them in Western Australia. They're kind of like the two main places. I remember hearing about people doing that in Western Australia. However, what I did not realize is that the whole whale shark, swimming with whale shark situation here is very extremely unethical. And I wasn't really fully aware of that before coming here. I just kind of thought, oh my God, I'm going to get to swim with whale sharks. And it wasn't until we got to the island where that is offered where I was like, oh God, no, this just has bad vibes all over it. So firstly, they do feed the whale sharks. So it's maybe not the most natural thing, like natural environment, because they know they're coming there to get fed. That, I mean, that you can maybe look past, I guess. If that was the only thing, you'd maybe be like, oh, well, they're getting fed. Do you know? Like when I saw the Komodo dragons in Indonesia, I kind of was thinking in the back, like they tell you they don't feed them, but in the back of my head I was thinking they definitely feed these guys because there's no way they could trust a Komodo dragon not killing a tourist in this situation. But anyway, the whale shark thing in the Philippines, it's become such a huge attraction that you could be queuing for like 5 to 8 hours just to get on the boat to see them for 10 minutes. So like, you can imagine how many people that actually is to form a potentially 8-hour queue to see whale sharks for 10 minutes. And that's like on a boat full of well, not a big boat, but like a little boat full of people. So that's a big queue. That's a lot of people every single day. And then the last kind of thing that is probably the worst in my eyes is, so there is a fine in place for touching the whale sharks. So if you've ever snorkeled or scuba dive, mostly scuba dive, because when you scuba dive it's like with proper companies and they usually like brief you on the dives. And anytime I've been on any scuba dive anywhere in the world, I've been on quite a lot of scuba dives now over the last 6 years since I got my license, every brief, because so basically you'll always have like a leader and the leader will always brief you on the dive before you go in the water, and every single brief I've ever had, the leader will always say, we do not touch the fish, we do not touch the turtles, we don't touch anything, not even the coral reef. We appreciate it, we observe it from afar, we keep our distance when there's things like turtles and stuff like that. Like that is just kind of the big main rule. You want to respect the sea world and everything that, you know, is within that. So they have these fines in place for touching the whale sharks, but they don't actually care if people touch them. So they do follow through with the fines, but they don't how do I describe this? So the fines are in place and they uphold the fines. However, a lot of wealthy tourists, apparently specifically like the wealthy Chinese and Korean tourists, that's what the Filipino people have told me. There are so many Chinese and Korean tourists here actually in the Philippines. I would say that makes up like the majority of the tourism here. But yeah, apparently that's like a big thing for them that they really want to do, to touch the whale sharks, and therefore they will still go ahead and touch them and just pay the fine. So as I said, like the fine's in place, but also they don't necessarily tell you not to. They just tell you if you do, you can just pay the fine. So it's like you're basically paying to touch them, if that makes sense. And I'm pretty sure it's quite an expensive fine. I think I remember talking to a girl from one of our accommodations that was saying it's like $50 for touching it once, and then any touch after that is $150. And apparently people will like purposefully touch them multiple times. I also noticed when we were snorkeling with the turtles, there was lots of people like trying to touch them. And I didn't see this myself, but I think, was it my boyfriend that saw it, or someone we were with saw them like fully like shove a turtle? And I don't know, it doesn't sit well with me. And when I saw everything and heard everything about the whole whale shark experience, I was like, no, I actually just couldn't do that. That doesn't sound right to me. So won't be seeing the whale sharks here. I mean, unless I happen to see them naturally on a scuba dive, that would be incredible. That is the dream. But yeah, it's not going to be the whale shark experience I thought it was going to be. I will have to add Western Australia to my list. So we obviously didn't end up doing that while we were in Cebu, but we did have the nicest time and got to snorkel with so many turtles. Like, where we were staying was literally right on the water, and you could just walk out from the accommodation with your snorkeling gear on and just go for it. It was incredible. Then we spent about 5 days in Siquijor, and my friends actually came and met us, which was so nice. They are currently just like working and living in Thailand, and they made the trip over to come see us, which was so fun. Siquijor was insanely beautiful. I think maybe one of my most favorite stops so far. Oh my god, like just so much to do, so much to see. Good food, good vibes. Small enough of an island that you can like fully get around it and see everything you want to see and do everything you want to do. And just like gorgeous, quiet roads. Kind of just everything you would imagine a beautiful little Filipino island to be. Siquijor was that. And that brings us to now, where we are in Bohol, as I said. We're actually flying to Quirón tomorrow. And then I think we have like maybe only two stops after that before we come home. It's like less than 2 weeks before I come home while I'm recording this, which is crazy. The Philippines is definitely a lot more expensive than both of us had anticipated. I had been told that it is a lot more expensive than kind of like surrounding Southeast Asian countries, but I don't think I quite knew like how much more expensive it would be. And I've also heard from Filipinos that it has actually been rising more so over the last couple of years. So say even from when my friend went like 4 years ago, it's gone up a lot since then. But yeah, just a little pre-warning to anyone planning on coming to the Philippines, or maybe if you've got it booked or you've got it on your to-go-to list, just bear that in mind, because we really weren't expecting this jump, especially when you come from Vietnam, and Vietnam is like notoriously known for how cheap everything is. But yeah, we're actually spending, I'm going to say, around the £30 to £50 a night mark on accommodation. I mean, obviously that's for a double room, so that's split in half. So for one person, that's 15 to 25. And then I would say another big thing is that local Filipino food is not one bit in the slightest vegan or even vegetarian friendly a lot of the time. So, well, actually, yeah, most of the time it's not vegetarian friendly whatsoever. So as a result of that, you're not eating any local foods. You're going to more Western kind of cafes and restaurants and things, and then obviously you're paying more for those. So yeah, overall, like, we're really rinsing through our budget, to be honest. The curly hair situation in the Philippines has been bleak. Looking back on Vietnam, like, I thought my hair was bad in Vietnam, but now that I'm here, I'm like, no, that was nice, that was fine. In Vietnam, it was just so humid everywhere, so I'd maybe get 2 days of nice curls, and then it was frizzy until day five, and then I just put it up in a bun for the last 2 days of the week before washing it again, and that was fine. Like, it never looked bad. Oh, actually, that's a lie. It did look bad because you're always wearing helmets and stuff on bikes. However, it wasn't like atrocious, you know? But then the second we got to the Philippines, now I knew this was going to be the case because the Philippines, it's all islands, it's all water activities. If you're not on a boat jumping in the sea, you're swinging from a rope jumping into a lagoon, or you're at a waterfall, or you're canyoning through rivers and waterfalls, like you're constantly in the water and therefore your hair is constantly wet. I'm not joking you, I will wash my hair and style the curls and then I get one day out of it and then the next day we're back in the water again and my hair is back to being disgusting. And also because you're fully submerged in water so often, it fully washes the toner out. So I'm not joking you, I'm just walking around with like this frizzy, luminous yellow thing on top of my head and I don't even look like myself. It's so bad. I actually washed it today, so thank God I'm feeling a little bit more like myself. But it's really not been looking good, bruv. And the salt water really fucks with my hair. Like, it really tangles it. I was brushing my hair out today before washing it, and I thought I had a full dreadlock. It was that bad. But I mean, there's more to life than having ashy hair. More to life than having ashy blonde hair. And nice curls, although I do miss them and it would be nice to be able to have both. My body is doing this fantastic thing where I just get my period at the worst possible times. Like, imagine you're away for a month and there's 4 days. I was going to say 1 week, but imagine more specifically, there's 3 or 4 days where you would really love to not get your period because that would be quite hassle-y, you know? For example, the Ha Giang Loop in Vietnam. But of course, I get my period then. And then the other day, I was thinking, oh my God, it's going to happen to me again. I'm going to get it at the time that I specifically do not want it. Like, of the whole 4 weeks that I'm here, it's going to be these 3 or 4 days. And of course, I go into my flow app, and isn't it the 4 days that I specifically don't want it to be? We're doing a boat trip, right, from the north of one island to the south of another. So from Coron to El Nido. It's 3 nights and 4 days. And you spend the nights camping in little tree houses with tents and things. Like, it's the coolest thing ever. But it is the one time you do not want to get your period because you're in the middle of the ocean all day without access to proper toilets, proper, like, disposal systems, if that makes sense. Your room at night is literally different camping locations on different islands. I don't imagine there's like great facilities there for stuff like that on little like remote islands where no one lives. And of course, then you've got the factor that you're in a bikini all day. So obviously you don't want your period at that time, but I'm going to be getting my period at that time, which is just amazing. Love that for me. No, literally, what can I actually do about that though? And don't say the pill because I don't have access. Like, I don't have it. I don't have access to that. So how would I do that? I need a home remedy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, sorry for the insanely long life update. I will finally get into this week's podcast topic. I feel like it's all relevant though, okay? Because this week I'm talking about backpacking. I thought it would be pretty fitting to talk about backpacking and how I feel like backpacking isn't for everyone. But I definitely didn't used to think that way. I used to think, oh my God, why isn't everyone backpacking? I don't understand it. Like, this is the best way to travel, the best way to see the world. I couldn't wrap my head around how people wouldn't want to do it. Because I have loads of friends and family members that wouldn't do it and have never done it. And I just find that so baffling. And I feel like my opinions on it have changed so much now. And I think doing a trip a little bit older has made me see it in a different way. And I don't mean in a different way as in a bad way. I'm going to get into all of this. But obviously, as you get older, your values change and different things are more important to you at different stages of your life. And that kind of makes, I guess, every life experience different, how you, at what age you experience it at. And I think as a result of that, and as a result of now experiencing it from a slightly different perspective at a slightly different age with, you know, a different coming at it from a different place in my life or position in my life, it's made me see like more sides to that. And whereas before I was so narrow-minded and so like, you're a fucking idiot if you don't want a backpack, basically, was my stance on the matter. Whereas now I'm like, no, I get it. I get why you wouldn't want to, but I also strongly encourage everyone to do it too, or experience it in some way. And it doesn't have to be the kind of way that you think of it as being, as like this big 2 to 6 month trip. Like it can just be for 3 weeks or whatever. But yeah, I'm going to get into all that. But that's the basis of this episode, is that backpacking just isn't for everyone. And I have come to learn that. So I think when I did my first backpacking trip and kind of fell in love with it, I was very much like, okay, why doesn't everyone do this? Like, I couldn't wrap my head around why other people weren't aiming to do the same thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, maybe they didn't want to do it like next month or within the year, but I don't know, like it kind of baffled me that people wouldn't have that on their list of things they wanted to do for the next, let's say, 10 years or so. Because it's also new and fun and exciting, and it's like nothing else you've ever experienced before. And you're meeting all these new people that are also kind of in the same mindset as you. So it's like you're all kind of bouncing off each other in the same way. And also, obviously, when you solo travel, it's like probably the easiest time in your life to make friends, because there's other solo travelers in the same boat, like wanting to put themselves out there in the same way. So it's kind of like for the first time in your teenage adult life where it's been really, really easy to just talk to people and to just make friends. And you're like, oh my God, everyone that does this is so nice. Like, we all have such common ground and everyone gets on so well. And I'm making friends with people and meeting people that I would have never had the opportunity to have made friends with had I have just like been in my normal routine. Like, in what world would I have been making friends with, let's say, a French girl that is 10 years older than me? Like, when would our two worlds have collided had it have not been for traveling? So you really kind of feed into this mindset of like, why would you not want to open yourself up to those experiences? And I don't know about anyone else that has maybe done a backpacking trip, especially if you've done one when you were like a lot younger. Like, I went when I was 19. So obviously just like not a care in the world. Like, literally could not have been more careless and free and naive. And sorry, as I was saying, like, I don't know if anyone listening to this is in the same boat, but maybe if you have done a backpacking trip when you're younger, because it is also new and so fun, and it's like you don't really know what your life is at that point, right? Hear me out for a second, I'm getting somewhere. So all I've known up until that point is school. I've just been in education my whole life. I've spent 1 year outside of that working as a makeup artist and absolutely loved it, don't get me wrong. Like, I came back after backpacking, went straight back into makeup artistry. I loved working as a makeup artist and I still do. But I had no kind of, how would you say? I had no plans for myself. I didn't know what lay ahead of me. I didn't know what my life trajectory was at that stage. So then when you go from that and not really knowing, I guess, what your norm is or what you're kind of like, you basically have no means to know what you want your life to look like at this point, because it's, you're so young, do you know what I mean? Like, you just haven't a clue. And I think as a result of that, then when you all of a sudden are catapulted into this scenario that is so fun and so new and so exciting and so rewarding, like so out of your comfort zone, which makes it so rewarding, you start to really get into the mindset of, actually, maybe I want this to be my life. Maybe this is what I value, this freedom and flexibility and seeing the world and, you know, gaining new experiences and new friends. Like, maybe this is what I want for myself. Like, these thoughts start to go through your head and you're like, should I start volunteering in hostels? Shall I try and like get a job somewhere out here? Should I get a job where I work from my laptop so I can just travel all the time? Every single one of those thoughts went through my brain. And I feel like
Most people who go and do a big trip like that at a young age probably also go through a similar motion. Like, I think it's very normal to go through the waves of that and to have all those thoughts coming into your head. I mean, if any of it actually materializes is a whole other thing, and I guess for most people it doesn't, so. But anyway, I very clearly remember at one point being like, why would I go back to the UK or Ireland? Like, what would that bring me right now? I could not for the life of me envision me just going back home and slotting straight into my old job and being content with that after what I'd experienced. Like, I couldn't imagine myself feeling settled. And that's probably why it took absolutely nothing for me to decide to go to Australia at that point. Like, I don't even think my ex-boyfriend had to ask me. I think he just told me he was going to Australia and I was like, okay, I'm coming too. I remember so clearly, like, truly thinking that my new kind of life plan, my new life trajectory was that I was just going to travel for the rest of my life. I was going to spend my life working to earn money to go travel and maybe also work while I travel if that was a possibility, but I didn't know that was a possibility. And yeah, I just kind of thought for myself, this is me now. Like, I don't care. All I need is a backpack and a book to be happy. And this is going to be me for the rest of my life. And now I have, well, obviously not now as in now, but at the time I had a boyfriend that was in the same mindset. And he was very much like, just work to travel, come back home, work to travel more, like always kind of ticking countries off the bucket list. And I think it's a great way to be. I think it's really good to have goals and places that you want to see and, you know, bucket list things you want to do. I think it gives you motivation to save money. I think it gives you drive to like work hard. And, you know, I do think it's a really nice thing to be ambitious like that. But I also think I was maybe running a little bit from the fact that I didn't have a fucking clue what I wanted to do with my life. And all of a sudden was enjoying this thing. I'm very like that. I'm very addictive personality will hop straight on the bandwagon the second I know I like something, and it will become my only personality trait, like fully consumed by that thing. I think when I thought of home or going home, all I could envision was either going back to uni, which I obviously did not have a good experience with first time round after dropping out 2 months into my first course and having severe mental health issues. Or I kind of thought, or it's into like a boring job, which I also don't want to do. And sorry, I'm not saying that my old job was boring, because I actually would have been happy to go back to that. But I think I would have felt a bit stagnant going back to that. I think in my head, it had been so normalized that what you do is go to university, get an office job after, like get a 9-to-5, that I didn't see anything outside of that. So although I knew I was enjoying working as a makeup artist, I don't know if I truly believed there was like longevity in that for me, just because of all the kind of like deep rooted beliefs I had about the kind of normal thing to do. So I think when I thought of home, that's just like what I associated with going back home. And I didn't want to face that. I wasn't ready to face that. I had the travel bug. I was having the time of my life. Like, why would I want to leave that? And you get so wrapped up, I think, because you're constantly just surrounded by other people doing the same thing, right? So it's just like an echo chamber of everyone doing the same thing. And it's a great thing, don't get me wrong. But obviously, as with anything where you're surrounded by people doing the same thing, it does just create a big, massive echo chamber confirming all the things that you want to think, if that makes sense. So yeah, it becomes your whole personality trait. You start to think, why on earth are people spending crazy amounts of money to go and stay in a nice hotel for a week, and that's like what they're taking as their annual leave, when I'm making that money stretch? Like, I remember speaking to people who told me they spent $2,000 to $3,000 in a week in Ibiza, and I was literally bamboozled, because I was like, you do realize that money is getting me to travel for 3 months, and you're spending that in not even a week, like 5 days in Ibiza. And that was crazy to me. And all of those things start to sound really crazy to you. Like, I don't know, you end up having this really like warped maybe not warped, maybe that's not the right word, but you end up having a really different perspective on a lot of things because your brain becomes all about like just making money and saving to then go traveling and thinking about what you could do with that. So I did end up going home after a year and a half, but that included like a year working in Australia. So now this is my first backpacking trip since I was 21. Was I 21? Yeah, I was 21. So what is that? I'm 25 turning 26 now. So we're talking 4 or 5 years ago. And I think it's really interesting for me this time around to see the switch in my mindset now as a 25-year-old who is a lot more stable in her life, a lot more clear-headed in terms of who I am as a person and I guess what I want to do in life. Not that I have like all the answers figured out, you know what I mean? Like, to be honest, if anyone asked me what I want to do with my life, I'd say I don't have a fucking clue, but I think I'm a little bit more, what's the word? I think I've my head screwed on a bit more and I think I know what brings me happiness and makes me content. I think I'm a lot more stable mentally. I just think when you're that age, you're just so naive and impressionable. And as a result of being so impressionable, you could be influenced to think that anything would be the right thing for you. No, sorry, that's actually not the right way to put it. That sounds like I'm saying you could be influenced to be a drug mule or something. No, what I mean is that I just think I was a bit lost, as I think any 19-year-old is in their life. And as a result of feeling a bit lost, I think anything could have like anything that gave me that kind of like sense of freedom and excitement and fun and was rewarding in that way would have obviously been like so attractive to me. I knew this time around would be way different. And there's so many factors that like meant that I knew it would be different. Do you know what I mean? Not only age, but also budget. The fact that I need to work a little bit while I'm away and therefore need to like make sure of certain things like good Wi-Fi, comfortable enough rooms where I can record my podcast. And not only that, but also the fact that with age, and I know it's not like loads and loads of years, like we're talking 5 years here, it's not a huge deal, but even with 5 years comes completely different values. Like, I don't want to stay in the party hostels anymore. I have absolutely no interest in doing that to myself. I don't want to stay in a 16-person dorm just because it's the best hostel and has the best pub crawl and is the best for socializing and location and all that. Like, no, sorry, don't care. I will be having a private room this time. I will be making sure my valuables, like my laptop and my cameras, are safe. I will have good Wi-Fi. I will have a comfy bed majority of the time. There are certain times where I'm okay with letting that slip for certain experiences. I will explain that in a second. But yeah, I knew it was going to be a different experience. I was not under any illusion that it wasn't going to be. And I just think the comparison is so interesting because if 5 years ago, or let's take when I was 19, actually, when I first went backpacking, if 6, 7 years ago when I was 19, I spoke to a person, let's say I spoke to someone that told me that they would only backpack if they could have private rooms, comfy beds, aircon, good Wi-Fi, I don't know, basically all the things I just said, right? If someone told me that, I'd be like, wind your fucking neck in. Why would you care so much about that? Like, there's so much more to it. That's not what backpacking is about. It's not about comfort and luxury. It's about opening yourself up to new experiences and meeting new people and being in these different environments that you're not used to. Like, that would have been my response. Whereas now, I'm like, no, no. I can still have all the experiences and do everything I want to do, but also have a comfy bed to come back to and be able to upload my podcast when needs be. You know what? I have actually been having some Wi-Fi nightmares. No, actually, I think that was just Shargal. I think Shargal was quite well known for it not being great when it comes to Wi-Fi. Everywhere else has been pretty fine, actually. But yeah, anyway, as I was saying, my mindset now, someone telling me that 6 years ago, would have thought they're a fussy bitch. Would have thought, well, you're not really experiencing backpacking then, are you? So obviously such a big contrast. And I think what this contrast has shown to me is that actually backpacking isn't for everyone. But also backpacking can be done very differently across the board. Like, you could go full on luxury if you really wanted. If it was a big dream of yours to, let's say, travel Vietnam, but you just weren't comfortable with a lot of the accommodations and hostels and things that you've seen, and you wanted to go full luxury, I promise you, you can do that. So you shouldn't let that stop you from seeing the world. The only thing is, it's more likely that your budget will stop you from doing that, to be honest, because that would be very expensive if you wanted to do luxury the entire time. But yeah, I think now I definitely understand more people enjoying their kind of home comforts and luxuries and not necessarily wanting to give them up, and therefore maybe choosing a nice hotel in Spain or a nice Airbnb. You know the food you're getting, you know the bed's comfy, there's no traveling between places, it's just one flight there, one flight back. Like, I get it, but what I also think is that a holiday and backpacking are two very different things, and there's space for both. As in, sorry, when I say there's space for both, I don't mean that every year you should be striving to go on holiday as well as a backpacking trip. That would be obscene. What I mean by that is that the two experiences are very different. Holidays are relaxing. Holidays are romantic. You switch off. You come home feeling rejuvenated and tanned, and you're kind of like your best self, I feel like, on holiday, especially if you go with your partner or something and you're on a little couple's holiday. Like, it's so romantic and you're both your best selves and there's no fighting because there's no reason to be stressed. Like, the only thing you have to worry about is where you're going to pick that night to go for dinner, versus backpacking, which is none of that. It is quite literally none of that. It is, I was going to say it's stressful. I don't actually find it stressful, but I guess some people would find it stressful trying to like organize it and plan it as you go. And also, like, little things crop up on the way, and I guess you can let those things stress you out or not. For example, last week's story with the visa, like, we could have let that stress us out massively, but there's no point in doing that. We also had like a situation with an accommodation. We arrived and it was just not what it was pictured, and it was not worth the money, and then we had to like sort out a new place really quickly and move to it. And like, you could see that as a stress, but there's also no point in getting stressed out in these scenarios. Like, you do just have to take them as they come and just like be grateful that you're in this situation in the first place. But I can see how someone that is really used to just like going on a holiday and not having to deal with any of that would find that kind of stressful. I mean, I would say if you're doing like beachy parts and islands, that side of things can be a bit more relaxing. But in general, I would say backpacking, like, you're go, go, go every single day. You're constantly knackered. Like, the second my head hits the pillow, I am a goner, because every day is just like back to back of like seeing the different sites and driving to the different places and doing this tour and that tour. And it's amazing. Like, it is incredible. And I think there is no better way to see the world and to see so many places in such a condensed amount of time. But it also comes with its discomforts. It comes with the fact that you don't know where you're staying the next day, and you don't, I don't know if I'm going to have any vegan food near me and therefore end up being really hungry for half a day. Are we going to have access to clean water? Are we going to have a functioning shower? As I told you, in one of our accommodations had no running water. Like, these are all things that you would guarantee you'll have on a booked, on a pre-booked holiday, that just crop up when you're traveling. And obviously those moments, like, they're not necessarily comfortable, but I think that's kind of like the whole point of traveling, is that you are pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, and it is so rewarding to see the world in that way. But yeah, I would most definitely not describe it as relaxing and romantic. And, you know, you're not coming home after a full day on the beach and getting a shower in your nice hotel and putting on your nice new summer dress and doing your makeup. Like, no, that shit does not happen. I cannot remember the last time I actually looked and felt nice, like, and put on some makeup and a nice dress. Actually, we got a little bit dressed up for Robin's birthday the other night, but yeah, apart from that, that's like, that rarely happens. I mean, it's probably some people's worst nightmare, but as I said, it's not supposed to be comfortable. But also, there's ways of making it more comfortable. If, like me now, maybe, I don't know, you want to stay in slightly nicer places. And yeah, I just think you don't have to box it off as being like this thing that people do when they're 19 and only stay in like really shitty hostels. Maybe shitty is the wrong word, because I actually love those hostels, but they're just not for me now. Anyway, I think there's space for both of these things. I think, let's say you work a really high stress job, really long hours, long weeks, just an intense job, and you get 20 days annual leave and you want to use those days going on a nice holiday and just switching off and relaxing and not having to think, not having to use your brain once the entire time. I fully understand that. Like, I would want that as well. But honestly, my biggest fear in life, this is what I've come to realize recently. Well, I don't know when I established this, but I definitely know for me that my biggest fear in life, I am petrified of getting to an old age, like getting close to death, basically, and thinking, oh my God, I should have done all of this when I was young. Like, all these places I've seen photos and videos of and heard so much about and like always wanted to do, but I just never was able to step out of my comfort zone and make myself do that and like reap the benefits and the rewards of that. Like, I'm such an idiot, and now I'm 90 years old and can't. That haunts me at night. I think this trip has really taught me as well that backpacking doesn't need to be this big, like, 3 month plus trip for it to be a backpacking trip, if that makes sense. Like, I really see for myself, maybe in 2 years' time, just like backpacking Mexico for 3 weeks, let's say, or maybe just coming out to backpack Malaysia for 1 month. So almost doing it more like a holiday, if that makes sense, as opposed to like this big intimidating trip. And that's just because I have a different perspective of what I deem to be backpacking now, I guess. And also, I'm a lot more settled. I'm more stable in my own life. I love my own life. It stresses me out leaving that for too long. Like, I'm actually at a point now, we're 6 weeks into our trip, or just over 6 weeks. And as much as I'm having the best time ever, and honestly can't wait for the next 2 weeks, we've got a lot of really exciting stuff ahead of us over the next 2 weeks, like potentially some of the best things. So it's not that I'm not looking forward to those things, but I'm very much at a point where I'm like, I could go home. And that's at the 6 week mark. So I think it's made me think differently about these kind of trips and what suits me as well. Because obviously that changes over time massively. In Vietnam, actually, we were in Ninh Binh and we were doing this river tour, the Trang An River Tour. Highly recommend it. It's incredible. One of my favorite things we've done in Vietnam. And basically, you pay for the river tour, you get to pick between a few different routes. I think there's actually 5 different routes, and you have to wait until another 2 people. So they get a boat of 4 people. And once there's 4 people all doing the same route, then they bring you out. So obviously we're a couple, so we're just 2. So we're waiting for another 2. And this couple, this Danish couple, come along. They're probably in their 50s or 60s. And they had picked a different route, and we were chatting to them and we were saying, oh, we picked route 3. And they were like, oh, we were actually deciding between route 2 and route 3. And then I think us saying that we'd picked route 3 made them be like, oh, actually, maybe we should pick route 3. So anyway, they pick route 3 and they put us on this little canoe boat together. And it's a 3-hour long trip, so we're obviously chatting away to them. And they just warmed my heart so much. I was like, oh my God, Thomas, that's going to be me and you when we're in our 60s. They were so cute. They had such a love and such a passion for traveling and such a want to still check everything off the bucket list and to see the world. And I just absolutely love seeing people at that age still being ambitious like that. It really warms my soul. And they were talking about how they loved traveling so much when they were younger, and they did trips like we were doing. And, you know, I think the woman was saying that she did like 5 months in India and Sri Lanka. And you could just see them light up when they were talking about their travels. And it was just so lovely to hear and to see. And they were telling us about this trip that they were doing in Vietnam and how they've always wanted to come to Vietnam literally since they were 18. Like, it's always been on the list and finally they're doing it now. And we were asking them how they were going about that, because we were saying, obviously, you know, when you were younger, you just kind of, like, you didn't even have apps and things to book hostels on. Like, you'd just show up at places and book things. Like, it's obviously changed so much. And we were asking how it's different now. And they were telling us, like, now we stay in more luxury accommodation, like, not five-star hotels, but we're definitely in, like, more comfy rooms. We've got everything pre-booked. Like, we went to a travel agent and pre-booked everything. We've got a driver that brings us to places and then back to the airport. Like, we're not doing any overnight buses. It's all by planes. And it's just like I think it was a 2 or 3 week trip that they were doing. And I was like, see, there are still ways to travel and to see the world, even when you're older and you don't want to be doing things like the night buses and staying in hostels. I mean, they might not have even had backpacks for all we know. They're probably traveling with suitcases if they're getting picked up everywhere and flying. So, you know, don't even have to have a backpack. I think it's inevitable that there's going to be times when traveling that you are just completely out of your comfort zone when it comes to food, when it comes to accommodation, the long days, the overnight buses where you get no sleep. You're out of your normal routine. You don't feel like yourself. You're not doing your normal workouts. Maybe that's warping your body image. But as with anything you do, when you push yourself out of your comfort zone, that comes with its rewards. And I think teaches you so much about yourself and about life, as weird as that sounds, and gives you a lot of perspective and sometimes mental clarity on, like, what you value in life. Look, traveling anywhere, whether that be on a holiday for a long weekend or backpacking for a month plus, traveling anywhere in itself is a huge privilege. Do you know the amount of people in the world that can never afford to even leave their place of birth or their city, let alone go to all these different countries? Like, it's a crazy privilege to have. Like, we met so many Vietnamese people who, by the way, are literally the loveliest people in the entire world. Like, the Vietnamese are, they just go above and beyond to just be nice people. And you meet so many of them while you're traveling their beautiful country and getting to see all these amazing things in their country. And you meet so many of them that haven't been able to afford to literally go anywhere outside of where they live. So it's an amazing thing to be able to do, to be able to travel, and we should never take it for granted. I hope this episode encourages you to travel and to maybe push yourself a little bit out of your comfort zone, even if on a really small scale. Like, I don't know, maybe if you're planning your next holiday in a year's time, you might think, okay, instead of just, like, going to a nice Airbnb or a nice hotel for a week, maybe let's try and, like, squeeze in 3 places in Interrail around Spain or something like that within the 10 days that you have off of work or of annual leave, or maybe you're a student and you've got the whole summer, so you've got a bit more time to play with. But as I said, there's obviously always space for the nice relaxing holidays too. We need that as well in our lives. Well, sorry, we don't need it. Again, it's a massive privilege, but I think living in the UK, you need your sun, you need your vitamin D fix. We don't see it all year. I know the title of this podcast is Backpacking Isn't For Everyone, but it actually should be Backpacking Is For Everyone. You just have to adjust it to be the way that works for you. But that's not a very catchy episode title, so that's not happening. But anyway, that's the point of this episode. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Again, apologies for the uploading schedule. It is all over the place. I literally can't keep track of the day. It's like, I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry. I will be back resuming to the normal schedule soon. I love you guys lots. I will speak to you in next week's episode. Bye.